coming up in this episode.
In the last 10 years, like, Vancouver lost like 400,000 square feet of office spaces. I mean, even our property tax last year was like $123,000 a year, like just for the property tax. Over that time, we managed to get through, but we just found ourselves getting like further and further into debt until we got to the point where we're like, you know what? This is now the time to like reach out to our community and, yep. and say,
hello, audio listener. Please subscribe, leave a like and review on the platform you're listening from. The video version of this show is on YouTube and the link will be in the description. And today I've got Luke Summers at the...
Beaumont Studios.
Oh, got it right this time.
You did. Sorry. You did.
So, a little bit about yourself. How did it all start with your music journey? And then coming into here, really. So let's start with yourself first.
Yeah, so from a music perspective, I mean, as far as electronic music goes, like I just kind of fell in love with it like when I was, God, like 13, 14. And when I was living in England, there was this town, Bletchley, that had these like crazy, like big warehouse raves. And, someone brought in this like Helter Skelter tape with a bunch of happy hardcore on it. And like I remember playing it to my parents. Yeah. And they were just like so horrified at the sound of it, and which made me really into it, first of all. And so, but that quickly turned into wandering into like the jungle drum and bass room, and yep. and so for years I was just obsessed with that, like that whole scene in like 1994, 1995, and you know,
it was a great era, wasn't it?
It was amazing, you know, like these like 12-hour parties with like 10,000 people, and like the who's who of like every decent DJ in the UK, like they would just yeah. like fly up and down the motorway, and you know, just play all of these different raves and all of these like parties. And so that kind of just sold it for me. A few years later I started DJing with a mate of mine just in his bedroom, you know, like yeah. just like how everyone starts, I guess. And then I kind of took a little break, and I found myself all of a sudden moving to Canada for reasons that were still not quite clear to me, but yeah. I made it over here. And and then pretty quickly I just like I think what started it for me over here was I went to this on the island. There was this party called Soundwave, and it was like just right on the beach, in between Tofino and UQ, like right on the west coast of the island.
I've been there. Yeah.
It's beautiful, right? Fucking, it's like amazing. Yeah. And I remember getting there like the first night. I had no idea what I was in store for, and we're like, it's like a 5-6 hour drive, and then we're going down this like logging route, and you just there was nothing there. And then all of a sudden you just open up and there's like three stages, a beach stage, and this kind of like music that I'd never even heard before. And it just like opened my mind up to like a whole different kind of style of music, like this like minimal, like it was everything though. It was like minimal techno. I was playing, let's listen to this like minimal like drum and bass almost. And that just set it off for me. Like, not only did I want to start spending more time DJing and like learning that craft, but I really wanted to just get involved in,
yeah, yeah.
in the scene. And like, how do I add to this? Like, how do I become a part of this? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was that. And then from that on, that point onwards, it was most of the things that I did. Like, I was working in software before, but I became a promoter. I started like doing my own shows, and me and a buddy of mine ran a stage like for the last couple of years of Soundwave as well.
Sweet,
and
man, yeah.
It just, yeah. And I just could never, and nor did I want it. I just never got away from it from that point onwards. And here we are today. Yeah.
So what was your first like DJ setup, or was you collecting vinyl back then?
The first thing I did, like when I moved over, well, the first gear that I bought was like an Allen & Heath, a little Zone 32, little two-channel mixer.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And a pair of 1200s. I started buying a little bit of vinyl, but then Serato like came out like yeah, exactly that
dominated
time.
Dominated at the time, didn't
they? Yeah, and you know what? Like, I didn't have, I was like at that point, I kind of given up my real job, and I was just kind of like bartending, trying to make ends meet, trying to throw parties and stuff. And yeah. so I bought Serato, and you know, all of a sudden you just had access to like all of this stuff. But like, because I learned how to play with just vinyls, and you know,
yeah.
So it was beautiful. But that yeah. So that was my first setup. It was like this little Allen Heath 32 mixer and two 1200s, and I don't know, that thing was a beast. Like that got thrown in backpacks. It got moved around bush parties, like the whole lot, like just.
Went through the wars.
It went through the wars, yeah. It went through the wars. I was sad to... I think I ended up selling it. I can't even remember who, but like it was still like just worked perfect, you know.
I had that with me and my mates used to throw parties. We used to have these two like like top speakers. Didn't even have a bass bin. I had this old Vestax like powered amp, and the dials were broke off, but it had like flathead screwdrivers inside there. So it took a screwdriver me to turn those up. And then sometimes the fuses were blowing up. Wiring like just a bit of wire in there, and just to get it running, still fucking worked.
Oh yeah,
it's fucking
yeah. No, my setup was pretty ghetto. Like I was even living at my girlfriend's place at the time. It was like, you know, it was the kitchen counter. You
yeah,
know, mate, a couple of little rocket speakers on either side. It's like that was it.
I found a picture of Dave. Me, at the chest of drawers.
Yeah.
The lining board. I had the mixer, and a Rocket 5 on this lining board. And on the chest of drawer, I had a CDJ 800. And then, yeah, it was just fucking so scabby. But I was like, that's how we've all done it, though, wasn't it?
Oh, we've all done it, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I did manage to grab hold of some CDJs, like when people still actually put CDs in them, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was like it was either the 100s or the 200s. Like
I when you the look, 100s, yeah.
Yeah, when you look at them now, it looks like a Fisher Price toy or something.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, like how did these things work? But
funny you should say that, because when I was building my studio, I was looking for like just like some pieces to put on show, display pieces, right? And I found a CDJ 200 for $70.
Right.
And met the guy like at 7-Eleven, and he's like, "So are you getting into DJing?" I was like, "No, man, this is just a very nice paperweight."
Yeah.
And then I was like, "No, it's going on the stage and that." So, yeah, man, they're classics. Like you say, when you look at them now, they're just like, yeah.
And they always came with like, I mean, because like not everyone had like table set up. So like I started like burning stuff on CDs and whatnot. And you know, remember those books that you had? Like,
yeah, I have one of them, yeah.
With the little sleeves and like just those little Maxell CDs.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I got all my CDs from Poundland, right? You could get like 30 for like £5.
That's right, yeah.
But if you wanted the good TDK or Sony ones, they were like £5 for like 10.
Yeah.
And then like after a night, the Poundland ones are so scratched, you'd be like...
Whoosh. Oh yeah, that's it. Well, there was always some fun in that because you could really like... You could really fling them, like if you got the right angle, yeah. You know.
So, yeah. So moving on from that, then, like, where did it go? Once you've done the bush parties here, how did it start getting into the promoting and stuff? How did it come into the Belmont Studios or the Boom? Oh, sorry, if I got this wrong.
The Beaumont. No, Beaumont. Hey, close enough, man. Close enough. So, like, I started like my association with this place. I think started back in 2006.
Yep.
So like I moved over here from the UK like in 2004. Had like a kind of like just a sales job and stuff. But when I made that change into like doing music, I was working with this guy, Sean, who had this like drum and bass label, like Pound Recordings. And we did this show here at the Beaumont, and it was like this like drum and bass kind of techno kind of mashup, like two rooms. I mean, it's a tight, this side of it is like a small space. But that's when I met Jude, who's the person that like founded this place. And and so I used this place, I mean, I was throwing a lot of parties for a while, and so I used this place a lot just to throw my own shows. And you know, over the years, I got to know the people here a lot more. And I ended up for a few years being on like the board, just like coming in advisory. But then about 4 years ago, after I was finished working with, you know, like the P&E, like down in Hastings there. Like,
oh, yeah.
I was doing a job for them for a while. And then she said, "Hey, do you want to come on board and help out here?" So that was like 4 years ago. So I've been pretty much focused on the Beaumont,
I'm just doing this.
I haven't, you know, I took a step back from like throwing shows. I only do a one or two a year right now, just to really focus on this, because it's like it's a crazy place, you know. Like aside from the fact that it's got like this 250 person venue space, which is really, really hard to come by in Vancouver.
Is this the bit we're in now?
No. The bit next door.
The bit next door. Okay.
This was like the original Beaumont. And this is where we used to, we somehow managed to get like 200 people in these two rooms here.
Yeah,
like,
it's mad, mate. When you told me, I was like, fucking
hell. I know. Well, I mean, it's because you got all the staircases and stuff. So people kind of like spread around. But yeah, it was crazy. That's how I got to know this place.
Yeah.
But the fact that it, like, I mean, first of all, like, yeah, the next door has got like 200, it's like a 250 person space. And there are so few of those left in Vancouver now. Like,
for sure,
you've got a lot of options. Like, if you want to throw an event that's like 500-800 people, you know, plus, then you've got some spaces. But the ones that have been really suffering like over the years are the ones that are like in these like kind of like light industrial zones, you know, that just pop up out of nowhere, like art galleries and stuff. Like, I mean, even this place, like when this place opened up, this whole area was like mechanics and little light industrial stuff. And, you know, you go now, next door is like one of the biggest animation studios in the world. And then across the street, you got one of the biggest software companies and like biotech companies and stuff. So the whole thing is changed. And it's like kind of the same pattern that you see in loads of places, right? Like, whereas before, you know, you'd have these places, like these warehousey kind of spaces that would just open up, but invariably they just get shuttered and turned into another condo.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like London, really, never earn it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, you're right. It's like, yeah, it's like everywhere,
yeah,
you know?
You're right, yeah. And obviously, like, obviously this is, you show me around and this is obviously providing a space where there is a gap in, like you say, in the market for electronic music and just be any creative space. We're not going to forget art, obviously, because you do art here as well.
Yeah, I mean, yep, that's kind of the thing. So this place has got like two venues. We got like this side, which is like, you know, 60 to 100, the other side. But like in between these two places, we have like 100 artists and creators that like rent studios here as well.
Fucking hell, really?
So it's not just, and it's not just artists. I mean, we've got lots of artists, like think about jewelry makers. We've got a tattoo studio. We've got two hairdressers, music producers, wig makers. Like, it's a home for like so many little businesses and whatnot, like in that creative sector.
And I
define like creative sector not just specifically to art, but like anyone that's like people that are trying to make a living out of like their creative passion.
So
that could be you're a painter or something, but it could also be you're a tattoo artist or you're a hairdresser or something like that. So as far as it goes, like, I don't really know any other place like this that's got like venues that, and we've done so many electronic shows here. Like, that's been a, we do other things too, but that's been our bread and butter for a long time. But to combine that then with like all of these open studios where people are just like creating and doing crazy stuff and all the time is like what makes it like such an interesting kind of space. It's not really like anywhere else I know of in Vancouver.
No, that's the thing, right? And like, you even offered to help me out, like when we get artists flying, like international artists, and play. You even offered to me, oh, there's a space where you can even for you, right? And,
and
that's a good thing about
even this room right here. Actually, yeah, I was going to mention that. It's like sweet. we could figure something out for you. Yeah, mate. No worries.
I might even have to take your seats off. Yeah,
yeah,
it's all right. Yeah, gold actually. I like a bit of gold. But yeah, like with regards to like you say in Vancouver now with the spaces that are very limited. Obviously, this is a kind of a trademark or a pinpoint for creative artists in Vancouver, small businesses. As we know, small businesses like prop up the economy as a collective, right? So with this place, keeping it going is obviously very important. What is it we can do, obviously, to help out build this place? Obviously, I'm trying my best because I saw it online. I was like, fuck me, mate. This is another creative space that could go under and we don't want it. I fucking hate seeing small spaces go under. And it's just like, fuck. So that's why I couldn't come out to you to obviously tell this story and tell me a bit about this place. So what like is it that's happening and what's going on and what is the help that we can do as a collective?
Sure, yeah, yeah. I mean,
I know it's a bit of a long-winded fucking question, but...
No. I mean, it's a good one. I mean, So, I mean, one of the things that, like, I mean, it's always, because we're a nonprofit, it's never going to be, it's never going to be an easy path, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we know that, like, there are a lot of other nonprofits out there, you know, they'll all need support, and we get that. But where we find ourselves right now is, like, you know, we live at, like, we're in a pretty expensive part of Vancouver. Like, Mount Pleasant is definitely not the cheapest neighborhood in the world. Yeah. When we moved here, like I said earlier, it wasn't what it is now, right? It was like a light industrial zone. And so what's happened to us over the years is, you know, like our property taxes and our rent and everything has just gone up like this insane amount. Like, it's just this like exponential rise in costs, you know? I mean, even our property tax last year was like $123,000 a year, like just for the property tax portion of it. Right?
Fuck, that makes me want to lose 10 pounds on the spot just here.
I know. I mean, and it's like, and you know, I mean, this is a whole other conversation, but
yeah,
we don't even own this place, right? Like, we're just renting it. And so, I mean, that's a whole other thing. It's like, you know, why do renters pay property tax? But that's just kind of the way it's been. And, but, you know, we always found a way, you know, we always found a way to just keep going and keep going and keep going. We turned one building into two buildings. Like, that was the last time we did a really big fundraiser so we could raise some capital to try and get that other side as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we just kept fighting through it. But then, you know, like in 2020, we got shut down. You know, we were lucky enough in the sense that we still had income from a lot of the tenants and all the people that rent the studios, but then, you know, those people were really affected too, you know? And then as far as the event side of it goes, like, we couldn't do anything, you know? So we have these two huge spaces that we were like legally mandated not to have any people in, you know, for the longest time. And that was always a big chunk of our revenue, you know?
Yep.
But we got through that, and it's kind of funny, like, well, it's not actually that funny at all, but it's funny in the sense that...
Oh, what you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it was after, like, when things kind of, like, got back to normal to a certain extent and we could start throwing things. There were... Not everything went back to normal. You know, the way people went out hasn't gone back to normal. Like, they're just... It's... We're in a different world now, you know? And so... Over that time, we managed to get through, but we just found ourselves getting like further and further into debt until we got to the point where we're like, you know what, this is now the time to like reach out to our community and say, you know, we've probably had like 1,000 artists or close to 1,000 artists that have called this place home over the 18 year period that we've been in existence. Like, tens of thousands of people have come here for various events, like shows, gigs and concerts and whatnot. You know, we think that like losing this space would be a big loss, because it's just not only, I mean, aside from the loss of venues, which would be huge, but like, just, you know, if we had to lose this place and we had like 100 artists that would have to find somewhere else to go, like, there are no places. Like, all of these places like are getting redeveloped into something else. And you know, what's kind of funny is, like, when you look at, I mean, this isn't just in Vancouver, but anywhere in, like, big cities, you know, you see places like, I don't know, like Brooklyn or somewhere like that, right? Yeah. That where there were these, you know, big artist presence and stuff. And that's what gave it kind of the cool vibe. But then because of that cool vibe, it became like this really popular place to live. And so I think people need to realize, like, from a developer standpoint, it's like, the reason you get like a lot of these places that become super valuable in terms of like real estate is because of the artist community and like the cultural scene that developed prior to that.
Yep.
You know? So if you cut that off, like, eventually those places are gonna dry up, you know? And it's just as important to keep the cultural scene alive for property and real estate value as it is for anything else. But I mean, going back to your thing, like, what we're doing right now is like we started a GoFundMe campaign on Monday. And the aim of the campaign is like, we just want to get back to kind of a level financial footing where, you know, we can start thinking about how we're going to keep growing this place like we've always done, you know, but right now we're kind of in this position where, you know, our focus all the time is just survival, you know? Yeah. And so we need to kind of get that off our back and get back to a place where we can start thinking about that again. So we can continue to throw shows. We can continue to have artists staying here. We can continue to support promoters and DJs and all of these people in Vancouver. You know, there are so many people here. There are so many promoters and so many producers of events that did their first show here. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you cut off that supply, yeah. then that's going to have like a detrimental effect for years to come, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, as we said before we started recording, the same in London, right? You know, in London, it's the same thing. You look at Camden, Shoreditch, place like that, right? They're the bougie yeah. quarter areas, but from creative spaces that have kept things going. And that's what brings people more to want to live there.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. But exactly. again,
you know, there's got to be that balance of keeping the creative side, but also keeping people, you know, bringing in homes, all that sort of stuff. But a space like this, again, like for Vancouver, is, I think, like we said before, it's definitely, definitely needed. And, you know, hopefully this episode can bring some, bring more awareness than what you've already got to help you guys out. But what does this place offer? Like, if, you know, someone who doesn't even know and wants to help support it, or even try and come here and use the space, what does this place offer? Like, how would you present that?
So, I mean, what I think makes the Beaumont like so unique and so special is just like this mix of creative. So there's a lot of places that are like, you know, specifically for like artists or painters, but we define the Beaumont and people that rent studios off the Beaumont as someone that is a creative in like the broadest sense. And mm-hmm. that could be, you know, we've got a couple of film producers and documentary producers upstairs in the building next door. And like I mentioned, like hairdressers, like this is a place where you, if you feel like you're in a point in your artistic or creative career where you're like, I wanna like take this to the next level and I wanna start making a living out of this, mm-hmm. you know, I need a studio, I need a place that I can call my business home, like,
yep.
you know, somewhere out of my basement, out of my spare bedroom and whatnot, and really take it seriously. The Beaumont is the place that can kind of help you do that, yep. you know. We've seen so many people that have come here, like rented out a tiny little studio upstairs and now they've got like huge spaces, you know, like photography companies and all of these people that have. So it's kind of like an incubator, you know. But if you're here as well, and if you are like starting up your career like that, you know, to be in an environment where you're surrounded by other people all doing the same thing
mm-hmm.
makes a huge difference, you know. Like you're surrounded by your peers, you know? You're surrounded by people that are all trying to do the same thing that you're trying to do.
Yep.
And that creates more opportunity. It's like this combination of like networking, just sharing your creative vision. And then on top of that, you know, all of the different events and stuff that we have here, like yeah, all yeah. the time. Like you just, when you came here, you saw me setting up for one event over there.
Yeah,
we've got like,
it's a cool little space, mate. Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. And, you know, and then you've got B-Side Radio in front, you know.
Yeah, the legendary B-side, yeah.
The legendary B-side. I mean, and it's become that, and it's and people are really into it, and that's only been going for like 2 years. Like I left work here yesterday. I think it was La Posma Baby was doing a DJ set on B-side. There was like 60 people standing outside just
yeah.
like partying.
Yeah. Oh, that's nothing actually. Yeah, cuz when I saw on like social media and Charlie, our married woman, who had a residency there. She was like, you need to come down and have a look. And when I had a look, you got the roller shutter doors and people can just all party outside. And
yeah,
it's fucking like great in the summer, right?
It's amazing yeah. in the summer, yeah. And it was just, I mean, just to change the subject, to go on to, the reason that kind of came about was because of the pandemic, right? Because, you know, we were faced with a situation where it's like, we definitely can't have any indoor events. Like,
yeah.
Then they relaxed it a little bit, so we thought, hey, let's take like the car park space between mm-hmm. the two buildings, throw a bunch of AstroTurf down, put a tent up and make an outdoor space. And so that was like stage one of like our like pandemic planning. It's like, let's just take the inside outside and do something like that.
Yep.
And then we're like, well, you know, we've got all these DJs and all of these people that are used to throwing shows here. Like, how can we make it make a way for them to still be able to like reach out their audience and in return like our Beaumont audience. And that's how the radio station came about. So they were like, you know, I mean, it was a shitty time for sure, but there were some pretty cool things that came out of it, you know. I can't even believe that whole process was like 2 years.
It was a nightmare. But
it was a nightmare. Yeah, I felt like, I mean, I don't know what you were doing every day during the pandemic, but like, you know, it felt like every day just like went on forever. But then somehow 2 years went by.
Yeah,
you know, like when you're in it was just.
Joe, I refuse to add on 2 years onto my age.
Yeah, yeah, I know. You know, I think that's pretty valid. It just was like gone.
So I was like, how old are you? Go, I'm 31. Are you sure? I'm actually 33, but fucking because of the beard, I'm actually sound 31.
Yeah, those two years didn't count. Those two years didn't count at all.
So coming off the back of that, then, like obviously, with regards to the vid, it actually kind of made a positive out of it by actually creating B-Side Radio into a space, and now that's here forever now. So that's another good positive thing, obviously.
Yeah,
come into it, right? So,
well, yeah, you got to take the rough with the smooth, right?
Yeah.
And so I mean, the radio station and the outdoor space too, like. You know, we created a whole different scene of like, we started doing outdoor comedy shows. We were doing like outdoor DJ shows every Saturday, you know. Those things almost certainly would never have happened if it wasn't for that, you know. And I'm not sure it was entirely worth it without the 2 years, but like, I mean, it's just that it speaks a lot of what this place is all about. It's like, we were faced with something that we're like, holy shit, how are we gonna get around this one? And then it happened, and I think that is a lot to do with just being in a place that's just surrounded by people that are all just focused on the same thing. Like, they all want to make a living out of their craft, out of what they love, you know, out of their passion. And when you have a bunch of people like that together in like one place, then some amazing things
can create some wonderful stuff.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
And like with regards to like people that are new that want to come here,
mm-hmm.
like how do they come about? Is it open to the public, or is it open to? Can people just come and buy and check it out?
Yeah,
and
I mean,
have like a tour of it.
We're open. Like one of the big tenets of like the Beaumont is like all of our studios have big glass windows outside, right? Yep. And that's kind of the thing that when you come in here and you take a studio, that's just part of the way it is. So people can wander around. Like our space is always open. All the floors are open.
Yep.
We have like a boutique, a thrift store. I didn't even tell you that.
No, do you have a story?
It's just through that door. Yeah, we'll go take a look at it in a minute. Yeah. But like the Beaumont Boutique. So like we're open for that, and we've got like a bunch of like local what do you call them, like reworkers and vintage suppliers and stuff that sell out of there. We have a coffee shop right there too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you've got hairdressers, you've got music studios, you've got a radio station, you've got a thrift store, you've got a coffee shop. What else is there?
You could come here, you could get a new wardrobe, get your hair cut, get a tattoo that you regret, you know, like all in one day, you know, and then
a lovely cup of coffee,
and then have a nice cup of coffee at the end of it all. Yeah. So in answer to your question, like we're open like Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
Anyone is welcome to come down there, and if they do, either myself or Jude or one of the people here will probably be inclined to take you on like a full tour, because we love doing it, right? Like,
that's cool. Yeah,
take a look at all these people, walk through the buildings. Grab a nice latte from, and I have to say, like, the guy's got Honest to Pete's coffee. It's the best coffee in Vancouver.
Yeah, and you know, a little plug there for Honest to Pete.
And it's worth it. It's worth it. And I promise he doesn't pay me anything. So, you know.
So that's wicked.
Yeah.
I noticed like you've got like kitchens here and stuff like that, and bars. So people can rent, like you say, this room out and serve food and for work things, anything like that, right?
Totally, yeah. So this space is used a lot for like little private functions, you know. You can rent this, you can rent any of our spaces out, you can rent this space out, you can rent next door out. We do a lot of our rentals are like kind of nightlife, kind of like DJ stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we rent out to like rehearsals for like theater people, like yoga sessions, birthday party, like the full range, you know.
Yeah.
And then next door is like, I mean, last night for instance, we had this group associated, I think they're with SFU, this crazy like 4 or 5 piece jazz band that we're doing a concert.
That's pretty sick. Yeah,
we do candlelight concerts like a lot. We do comedy nights, you know, and we also do a lot of our own events too, you know. I think we're gonna be arranging like a big fundraiser night like at the end of April, which you're going to be releasing pretty soon. But yeah, I mean, we're open to anything. And of course, we always rent studios too. I don't think we have any. We have like one studio available at the moment.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's. I mean, I think that is one of the things that really speaks a lot to the Beaumont, because even during the pandemic, like right at the beginning of it, a lot of people were like, "Oh my god, I don't know if I can," because you know, having a studio space, especially when you're like suddenly thrown out of work, is like you could consider as a luxury, right? And yeah, it's like, okay, what am I going to cut out? But people saw this as so valuable. Like we pretty much remained at full capacity like throughout that whole period, because people really valued what they had here, you know. But yeah, I mean that's it. We love people coming down, come and check out the space, see what it's all about, and you know. We've had, like, going back to our GoFundMe campaign that we're doing for a second, we've had an amazing support from our community, but we've also had support from people that perhaps don't even know us. Because I think even if you're not aware of this place specifically, but you have a vested interest in the health of like the cultural community,
of like creative spaces, and things like that. Yeah.
If you can see the value of a space like this, then, and people clearly have, then you know, donate to our GoFundMe campaign. I mean, that would be amazing. It's you can find it on our website, which is just thebeaumontstudios.com. Yeah. But we only launched it on Monday. I checked a couple of hours ago, and I think we managed to get up to about $22,000-$23,000 already. Wow. In a few days. And it's always such a, you never know. Like, yeah. we think that we give a lot of value to Vancouver, and I think so far it's people can see that, you know.
Yes, yeah, so, I mean, like, from what I can see, and me, you know, you show me around, it's a fucking great space for, you know, like you say, anyone, creative, art, businesses, you know. And that's the thing that keeps, from what I've figured out, is that it props the economy and of that area, right? Keeps it vibrant, like you said before, keeps it going, keeps it moving. And also, a lot of people, you know, when you've got a studio space, you can remove yourself from normal society and be creative in your own normal space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because some people do it at home. They're like, okay, I'm in my house still. I've been working at home all day on my computer. I can't really make music or do this, do that.
Yeah.
And when they come to space, their mindset's like, okay, I'm in this room. This is my creative. And then they sort of switch their brain, you know, to...
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I know some people are fine with like working from home. And I mean, loads of people had to get used to it over the last few years. But like, I mean, for me personally, it's nice to have, especially when you're doing something creative too, you know, it's nice to have like a separation from like home, you know, even if it's just a garage or something, right? But something like outside of where you just kind of like live, because it, for me at least, really focuses my mind. Like if I'm out and I've got a space that's like, this is, I'm here to do this one thing, you know, and this is my space for that, then I think it makes it a lot easier to be able to create stuff, you know.
For sure. And that's the reason why I like to do this podcast as well, is because, you know, as Vancouver, we're all trying to build it, we're all trying to make it a creative space, and this place offers that. And yeah, mate, hopefully this will help. So
I hope so too.
And,
I hope so.
Send me all the stuff. I'll link it all down below, like in the description of this video on YouTube. And hopefully we can get something going, and hopefully keep it moving smoothly.
I think we will. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's always tough to be a nonprofit in Vancouver, for sure. You know, but you know, this is definitely not the first time we face some pretty big adversity, and I'm sure it won't be the last. But what I can say is that if we continue to see the support that we've been getting so far, then, you know, we've got many years ahead of us, and we can start thinking about like, What's the future of the Beaumont after that? Like, yeah, where can we go from here? Like,
that was going to be my next question. Yeah, like, what are the future plans for this place? Yeah.
So we're lucky enough to have a landlord that's been hugely supportive of us, you know, over the years, you know, even in like this kind of time. And so the conversations that we want to have next are with, we got to think bigger. We got to talk to start like developers and whatnot, and say, you know, how can we take this space and turn it maybe into a 3-story, 4-story building and take a couple of floors over or something like that? Yeah. Because, you know, you can't stay still. You got to move with the times. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, more people are coming to Vancouver. Like, more people want to start businesses here. More people want to live here. The amount of properties available has to reflect that, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It would be nice to preserve all these neighborhoods, you know, like with these like single dwelling places and stuff, but it's not, you just can't do that. So we got to think bigger. And like I said earlier, I think from, you know, if there are any property developers, like, you know, listing, these are the places that make these areas expensive in the first place. Yeah, if it wasn't for these places in the first place, then, you know, like even places like in Gastown and like in Yaletown, you know, Yaletown once upon a time was just like a bunch of like light industrial stuff, you know, around mainland and all that. And people are attracted to it because they start going there and they have all these cool experiences and they see artists, they see bands and music and all of this stuff happening, and it creates this like super vibrant scene. And then what happens is people are like, oh, how do I get into that? And then the property prices go up. And so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of gentrification. But, you know, we're the places like the Beaumont and other artists and other spaces like that are kind of like the seed for those things to happen in the first place.
Yeah.
I think. And so you can't have one without the other. Like, we've got to keep these places going. Like,
for sure.
We just have to.
Like I said earlier, right? It's that balance, isn't it?
It's the balance. Yeah, it's the balance. But like Vancouver's always had this kind of, at least in Iowa, like, you know, you got all these like no fun city and all these kind of monikers like that are like, but I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff happening in Vancouver, there is a danger that if you just go too far the other direction, you know, you just end up with this like boring as hell, like sterile environment. It's like, but it is pretty, you know, that's a good thing about Vancouver.
Yeah, it's nice,
you got the mountains, you got the beaches and stuff, but you know, is that enough to make a city truly special? I don't think so, not for a second.
It's got to be the creative side,
the cultural side of it, and that is what makes a city great, and that is what, like, and not just developers, but, you know, the city and all the people that are involved in like the planning and the future planning of the city have to understand, is like, if you want to be not just a good city but a great city, then the only way that that can happen is by building up the root cultural scene of it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's like Berlin, right? You know, the music scene there, the music is what keeps the city alive.
It's what keeps it going. I think I mean, especially with Berlin, like over the years they've done an amazing job of finding that balance.
And
they've done that because they don't relegate like the cultural scene and especially the electronic music scene like on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. Like the people that have been doing that have understand like what that brings to the city, and it's much bigger than just the music. It's like it's the heartbeat of it. It's like it's the heartbeat of the city.
Exactly. And then again, you know, we're gonna like this place, another place in Vancouver, we want to keep it going to keep these spaces available for people that want to come into, you know, into the music scene or art scene or any creative sort of venture they want to do. We've got to keep these spaces open and obviously build that heartbeat for Vancouver to thrive like that, you know. So I had the same thing. We had a discussion actually with a couple of friends who are promoters, and they said a lot of people, they fly to Toronto, Montreal, and they go straight down to LA and miss Vancouver. But now they're starting to come here.
Yeah.
You know, and we need spaces like this for international people to come use it, right?
Totally. I mean, from my time as like a promoter, I brought in a lot of DJs from like Europe and the States. And it was always kind of a challenge to do that because, you know, like when... Especially if you're bringing in a big name act that's got like a big ticket, like the best thing you can do is kind of offset that cost and do flight shares with. And if you're on the East Coast, you got all these cities like within like a couple of hundred miles, you know.
Yeah,
like,
it's like 5 hours from London.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're on the East Coast and you've got Montreal or Toronto, but then you've got all the cities in the US, but Vancouver's always a bit of a challenge because there is like, okay, you got Seattle, but then that's pretty much it, right? And so it's even more important to make sure that the Vancouver becomes an attractive city for these people to come to, because you don't have the luxury of being able to offset tours to like another three cities that are all within 2 hours of each other, because, you know, so you've got to make it really special. And there are so many things in Vancouver that do make it unique, like the scenery, like the mountains, like everything. Like, I genuinely believe that people really do love coming here, and if you can match that beauty with like a really vibrant kind of scene, then it's just going to become more and more attractive, and then that is gonna be the seed for making the city even better. And you know,
exactly, yeah.
And in turn, that's gonna make property more, like all those things that the developers want and the city want are gonna happen too.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
we just don't want it to turn into this kind of like cultural kind of like sterile wasteland, you know, where people just like come into the city to work and then disappear off into the burbs, and you know, we just. But there's a lot of work to do, and it's like, and it starts from like the grassroots, from places like this, and making sure that not only the Beaumont flourishes and Beaumont does well, but there are people that maybe someone is like, oh, you know what, I would love to start a place like this. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd love to start another place in New West or somewhere like that, where, you know, and there are a few for sure. But create an environment that actually allows them to do that. Is supportive and said, oh yeah, you wanna create like another cultural space, and there are grants available for you. There's support there for you, and not just put up these like hurdles after hurdles after hurdles. So, you know, because eventually people get disheartened, and
they do, yeah. Yeah. And again, like going back to this place, you know, having that community, you know, so if I came in here and obviously I have my music studio here, for example.
Yeah.
And I go to Buddy's Coffee there and go, look, I want to learn how to make coffee. Come in, the man, I'll show you how to do it. You know, it's that networking, right?
And, that's a huge part of it, you know. The people can kind of like cross pollinate like their own businesses, you know. I mean, it's no joke. Trying to make a living out of like being an artist is like, I mean, it's has always been like
it's always really been fucking a tough hard, road, right? Yeah.
Like that is not an easy road to follow, you know. I mean, think of all the artists. Like, most of them get famous. Like, you know, how do you get famous as an artist? It's like
fucking look at Andrew Weatherall.
Yeah,
you know, just in his room, just fucking blew up and
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you know, no money, no nothing. Yeah,
it's more often than not, it's a labor of love, and so you've got to make an environment that makes it as easy as possible to do the things that you need to do, and networking and getting to know people in that business is huge. It's a massive thing, and spaces like this, which combine like venue spaces with like artists and all of these different people. They're all just like feeding off each other, basically. And I don't mean that. It sounds like feeding off each other, feeding off each other.
The coffee's
like,
feeding this guy. This guy's feeding clothes. Yeah,
actually, everyone's feeding off the coffee guy for sure. But you know what I mean? Like just like they're getting inspired by each other. You know, I definitely notice it. Like when you're with a group of people that are all like excelling at what they do, you know, and making something of themselves and making a living out of like something that they love, which is, you know, which is a really rare thing, you know. They'll actually say that, what do I do for a job? Like, I do what I love, you know. Like, a lot of people don't get to say that, you know. And so you got to make an environment that makes it possible for those people to succeed, you know.
Yeah.
And that starts with having a space that these people can call home to do that, you know.
Yeah. And you are a product of your environment, right? If you surround yourself with positive like-minded sort of driven people, then that's going to help you out.
I think there was a do you know the East Van Culture Crawl? They do it every year. It's like all of the art studios and everything all across East Vancouver, like they open their doors over the same weekend, and you know, it's been a hugely popular event over the years. And so they did this report. This is in 2019, and they determined that in the last 10 years, like Vancouver lost like 400,000 square feet of artist spaces that weren't replaced.
Yeah.
Right. That was 100. So I think that covered, I think it was like 150 or 152 like buildings that are just not there anymore. Now, when you consider that that was a year before the pandemic, right? And I know for a fact, like so many people and so many businesses and places like, you know, like open studios, a whole bunch of them like have disappeared since then. You know, I would argue, I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but I guess that that number has gone up by like 50% more.
Probably, yeah.
So you're probably talking about like 600,000 square feet of space that was specifically for people to create has gone, and without any real replacement.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a big problem. You know, like I even saw the other day there was this like Google map that someone had done, and people are doing like guided walking tours of it, of all the places where there used to be venues. Like,
yeah.
And then I saw this map, and it was just like dots everywhere, like all down Commercial Drive, all around Mount Pleasant. Like, I mean, most of the places I used to throw parties at when I first started doing it don't exist anymore at all. Like they're gone. Like they're a condo. And we got to stop it. We got to make that stop.
Keep some of these spaces open and
we got to keep the places open, because you can't just keep losing spaces like that without someone saying like, okay, we really, really need to, like a developer wants to develop something here. They need to put money back into the community, give away a floor. I mean, they do have kind of programs like that, but they're always so like convoluted. And, you know, I think you mentioned to me before we started talking about like the grant process and stuff. I mean, none of that stuff is easy, you know. It's not accessible for artists really. And we need to act. And so like, this is a perfect example. It's like, we can't afford to lose this place. If we did, I'm sure a lot of the artists here would be able to find spaces, but I would wager that a few of them wouldn't be able to, because there's nothing available. So what do they do? Like, oh, maybe they stop producing and go back to doing something that they don't really like. And it's like, that's just tragic, you know, like that's a real loss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you're saying, mate, I do. And hopefully, you know, this brings awareness and brings some light to it. Is there anything else you want to like plug for the place?
I mean, all I would say is like, you know, if you kind of resonate with these ideas, and you want to donate and you want to help us out, then go to our website, thebeaumontstudios.com. But if you can't, I mean, you know, that's the other side of it too. Like, we're facing a pretty uncertain financial times here. And if you can't, just think about sharing our story and letting some people know. And that's all I can ask, really. It's like, you know, tell people our story, share our GoFundMe, and, you know, I will say that we're already in 5 days, like well over $20,000, and you know, for our initial goal of 42. So we're like, we're blown away by the support that we've had.
Fantastic,
you know?
Mate.
We just want to keep going so we can keep offering this space and offering it to DJs, producers, and everyone for years to come.
Yeah.
You know, and then we'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's good, mate. It's good. No, it's positive mindset. You know, what I mean?
It's like, gotta be. Yeah,
it's gotta be right.
Go big or go home, right?
No, mate, I appreciate you having me here.
Oh, hey, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, and I appreciate you telling everything about it. So, yeah, hopefully you guys can help out and share it. And
all right, well, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, man. No worries, it's been fun.
Yeah, it's been good.